Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
One, two, three, they're gonna run back to me, 'cause I'm the best baby that they never gotta keep. One, two, three, they're gonna run back to me. They always wanna come, but they never wanna leave.
On Tuesday, Zohran Mamdani was elected mayor of New York City.
That's organic applause. That's New Yorkers at Saturday Night Live.
A lot of
Slewa
fans.
And, you know, it's worth remembering that as much as if you're a conservative, you might think, well, it's so crazy. Well, he did actually win the election, though. It means there are thousands or perhaps hundreds of thousands or millions of people who are really excited about this.
Andrew Cuomo spent the last day before the election campaigning around the city in a white Ford Bronco, which is what O.J. Simpson used to get away from police. But at least O.J. was ahead in the race for a while.
Oh, boy. Wow.
I mean, he was ahead in the race the whole time.
Conservative critics have been calling Zohran Mamdani a far-left radical as well as a jihadist. But he can't be far-left and a jihadist. I mean, what do you think he's going to do, turn ISIS into thesis?
The Supreme
I worked
Court.
Really hard on that comment.
Yeah. Okay. I like that. One more.
Lionsgate has released the first trailer for Michael, the upcoming biopic about Michael Jackson. And like Jackson, it starts out very dark, but ends in a much lighter tone.
Wow.
These are some thinkers.
Yeah.
These are some thinkers. Oh,
goodness.
Oh. 8:13 on News Radio 92.3. What was that? Oh, I just was told a story that, not to trigger anybody, but downtown parking, right?
Right.
Downtown parking is brutal. Oh, by the way, Julio is off today. He was in the middle of something. He couldn't do the movie reviews. But if there's any one thing about downtown that you can get the massive number of people to agree with and be frustrated about, it's parking. Now, I know the mayor says that parking numbers are up and that, you know, all that. And I agree, but I'm just telling you, if you talk to people, that's the thing, you know, and they are like not just a little upset. I just talked to somebody who, this guy's name was Jim Gramlich, and he repairs the clock in front of the Artel, like at Palafox and Government.
Yeah.
He's been maintaining it for decades, and he just got done working on it, just got it fixed up, working properly, whatever. So great. And I guess he does it at no cost just because he thinks of it as like public service or whatever. So he was working for the county because they own that portion. Anyway, and they gave him a parking pass placard, you know, to put in the windshield so that he could park, you know, and not get a ticket. Well, he parked in the loading zone, and they told him to move. He's like, "But I'm at tools." they wanted to park in the parking garage. He's like, "I got no."
Right.
So he parked in a regular space, but he didn't pay for it on the app. And he's got this placard that says he can park, and he's been parking like all week working on it. And then he got a ticket. He's like, "How'd I get a ticket?" But so he goes, I guess, to the county, and he said, "Can you take care of it?" So they talked to the parking people, and they couldn't get rid of the ticket. They could just do it as a warning. And he's like, "But I didn't do anything wrong."
Right.
I mean, granted, a warning doesn't cost me anything, but why do I have to accept that they screwed up, but I get this, you know, sort of mark against my character or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
And I know this is not like the biggest, most important thing, but that's the kind of stuff.
Junk.
Yeah. You know, other words we don't say on the radio, that people encounter all the time. And, you know, look, I talk to the mayor every week. I know he knows there's a lot of things that they're trying to work on. And I know there's kind of the sentiment that it's all the mayor's fault. You know, I don't know whose fault it is exactly, but it's a mess. It's continually a mess. So, I don't know, maybe we can get Jim Gramlich's warning eliminated. Wouldn't that be nice? At least a little thing?
That would be, because, you know, he's doing a public service.
Yeah, and yeah.
For
and,
free.
You know, we do so much to make this city inviting and welcoming and better.
And that clock's awesome.
We can do better. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
Yeah, for sure. That's right. No accidents to report to you right now. Looks like I-10, I-110, 90, 98 are all flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
When you were 18, you spent your spring break in Cancun. The party was legendary, and you speak of it often, even though you don't remember half of it. The geeky kid who sat across from you in math class stayed home, practicing calculus. You made fun of her. A lot. That is, until last year, when you owed the IRS a lot of money and called the certified public accountants at Benakis & Associates. And she answered the phone. Who's laughing now? The number crunchers at Benakis & Associates live and breathe accounting and tax preparation. It's practically in their DNA. When you need to know what the heck a Form 656-PPV is, call Benakis & Associates. When you need a QuickBooks Pro advisor, call Benakis & Associates. When you need someone who practices long division for fun, call Benakis & Associates. Now in the historic district on 120 South Alkanes and online at flacpas.com. Benakis & Associates. Leave the numbers to the experts.
Hear that? That's Mike. He took ZzzQuil Pure Z's, so now he's sleeping soundly on a Sunday night. ZzzQuil Pure Z's are fast-acting melatonin gummies with a complimentary botanical blend to help Mike get the sleep he needs to wake up refreshed and ready to conquer Monday.
Let's do this Monday.
ZzzQuil Pure Z's, just for sleep. Really great sleep.
These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. These products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Use as directed.
When emergencies happen in Florida, every second counts. Beacon keeps you informed. It's the new statewide network bringing official emergency alerts straight from the Florida Division of Emergency Management and agencies statewide. No hype, no ads, just clear, verified updates to help protect you and your family. Download the free Beacon 24/7 Alerts app in your app store. Brought to you by the Florida Division of Emergency Management, the University of Florida, and the Florida Association of Broadcasters.
Want to win tickets to Florida State home games? Download our News Radio Pensacola app, then tap that app. Tap that app to enter Monday through Friday on News Radio 92.3.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for Sydney Sweeney, the mellifluous, buxom, blonde-haired, blue-eyed starlet of the softcore porn series Euphoria, who was more recently rendered infamous and officially held accountable by us for her eugenics-promoting white supremacy culture-saturated ads for American Eagle jeans. Now that some of the furor over her thinly-veiled homage to the furor has died down, the doe-eyed vixen of Valhalla has reignited the firestorm with her completely unacceptable answers to fashion magazine GQ's questions.
We're sort of talking around this American Eagle ad right now, and maybe we should just talk about it. So, were you surprised by the reaction?
I did a jean ad.
I did a jean ad? Oh, no, dear Othern. Have none of our highly capable thought fixers had a chance to indoctrinate her with even the most basic precepts of intersectional cultural linguistic theory? How many times must we explain it? A jean ad is never just a jean ad. Every moment of every day is an opportunity to make everything about our religion of enlightened progressivism. And when you fail to saturate literally every square inch of life with our wokest dogma, you abdicate your obligation as a person of enhanced popularity to use that platform to virtue signal this world to its better outcome.
Is there something that you want to say about the ad itself? The Sydney Sweeney has great genes.
The ad spoke for itself.
No, nothing ever speaks for itself. We must always be adding interpretation and guidance to even the most ham-fisted of artistic constructions to be certain that nobody ever learns to think for themselves and that every message is conveyed with the most on-the-nose clumsiness that authoritarian art excels at. And that's why it was so important for GQ's intrepid reporter and in-house advanced practitioner of upspeak and vocal fry, Kat Stoffel, to give the unrepentant lass one last chance to explain herself.
Criticism of the content, which was basically that maybe specifically in this political climate, like, white people shouldn't joke about genetic superiority. Like, that was kind of like the criticism, broadly speaking. And since you are talking about this, I just wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about that specifically.
I think that when I have an issue that I want to speak about, people will hear.
Well, this level of impertinence is completely unacceptable. It was bad enough that she did the white supremacy ad. It was worse that she refused to apologize for it. It was even worse that she refused to answer our Inquisitor's questions, carefully designed for maximum disarming effect. But to dismiss the obligation carried in the question itself, as though silence is ever an acceptable option, this is tantamount to blasphemy. The only thing we must always remember about our basic doctrines is the first basic doctrine of the Holy Church of Woke. Always respect the offendedness of the almighty groupthink. When the collective has brought accountability to your front porch, you must absolutely let them in, offer them a mint julep, and answer the stinking question. But I suppose in the end, we cannot be shocked that Sydney Sweeney, the poster princess of modern Nazism, would stray so terribly, so flagrantly, so intentionally from the path of true virtue. After all, what are her initials? SS? Anyone without enough basic decency to change her own name so that she doesn't look like the obvious mouthpiece of the master race can't be expected to do anything else right. Well, now you can feel the sternly worded wrath of us all, Miss Aryan America 2025. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, oh dear Otherin, last week was such a beautiful moment in cultural change-making as the various off-brand elections showed a sea change in America's willingness to elect just our kind of people. And although the lioness's share of attention was lavished on New York City's Zoran Mondani, a lesser-discussed revolution also took place in Seattle, with the election of Mayor Katie Wilson, a community organizer who daily embodies the true principles of modern socialism, mostly by still living off of her parents' financial support. But the reason we want to celebrate this week's recipient of the brushed bronze Birkenstock of virtue with three non-GMO hemp tassels is her comments about the evil empire of Kroger grocery stores, which in the Northwest is Fred Meyer. As she said during a campaign speech at one that was closing,
access to affordable, healthy food is a basic right. We cannot allow giant grocery chains to stomp all over our communities, close stores at will, and leave behind food deserts. Together we can build a Seattle where fresh food is for everyone, not just for those who can afford it.
It is such music to my egalitarian ears. Everyone deserves these things that other people provide, amen. And to hear her so adamantly announce that privately owned grocery stores will no longer be allowed to close down, of course! If grocery stores have to let government permission to open, they obviously have to get government permission to close, duh! We are the government, after all, and we know best! Although she did stop short of announcing the next logical step that the city would just seize these stores, as other socialist governments have done throughout history, and in seizing them, the city can begin operating them, you know, efficiently for the benefit of the citizenry instead of for the benefit of the people who, you know, actually own them.
As mayor, I'm excited to step up and with UFCW explore public option grocery stores to fill those gaps.
Yes, by Lenin, only when the left coast proletariat can own and operate the tools of production and distribution like grocery stores can real equity and prosperity come forth. For instance, she will force them to operate on the basis of fairness rather than on the basis of competitiveness.
We'll also ensure that companies offer fair discounts to customers. Companies should not be locking discounts behind smartphones, making them inaccessible to elderly and low-income shoppers.
Yes! And who will decide what is a fair discount? We, the government, of course. And in fact, her vision of marrying grocery stores to public housing is so obvious, it's almost a wonder nobody else has ever successfully merged public welfare accommodations with public welfare feeding locations.
And as we build new housing throughout our city, we will lay the foundations for food security with grocery-oriented development zones, or GODs, if you will. We will pair full-service grocery stores with workforce housing, dedicating some of those units for those who rely on SNAP and WIC.
GODs, indeed, where people can learn to worship the government that provides everything for them. What will this brilliant mind, who still depends on her parents for a living, come up with next? Government food sold at a discount to people living in adjacent government housing and presumably using government transit to go to work at their government-mandated minimum wage jobs? I may have to move back to the Great Northwest just to experience the prosperity for myself. And once she impanels her cabinet with what she promised would be Black, Indigenous, Hispanic, Latinx, not to be confused with Hispanic, LGBTQ, and Asian members, this overeducated white woman might finally pay down at least half of the white guilt she learned from her professor parents. Let's just hope she doesn't run out of cabinet-level positions before she runs out of demographic categories to check boxes with. But if she does, perhaps she can just curate new roles, like Secretary of Proving a Point, or the Supervisor of Representation, the Vice Chancellor of Being Seen, or just Senior Diversity Hires 1 through 3. So well done, Mayor-elect Wilson. We literally can't wait to see what thriving sector of the private economy you decide to fix next with bigger, better government, just like all the super successful socialists before you. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sisterin, and otherin, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.
I just got a text in from somebody who says, please tell me this isn't real. Oh, it's always real. Oh, the Transgressors is that always, is these real. Are always real stories. And I didn't have enough time to even do my third one, so I have to save it for next time. But the stories are always real. Now, the satire and the embellishment is me, but sometimes they write themselves. Sometimes even I can't, if I made it a Transgressors, you would think it was fake.
Right.
Sometimes the real is scarier than the fake. John Pickens has got traffic on the fives. John?
That's right. Brought to you by Frontier Motors, the only dealer Dave Ramsey recommends in Pensacola. That's Frontier Motors on Beverly Parkway. Still rolling accident-free right now. Looks like I-10, I-110 are looking good. Also not seeing any delays to let you know about. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Oh, by the way, though, surrounding the Sydney Sweeney story, there was a fake story. It was the claim that this basketball coach, a lady, had said that jeans are really a black thing and that a white girl appropriating jeans that were a black heritage item, that that's cultural appropriation. She didn't say it. It's false anyway. But, it, you know, she's been asked that in press conference. She's like, do you guys, come on, I'm right here. Are you kidding? So that story actually turns out to be false. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, federal workers are getting back to work today with the government shutdown over. The White House is urging agencies to send out paychecks as fast as possible. Some are expected to get their checks as soon as this weekend. Charlotte, North Carolina is expecting immigration enforcement to arrive in the coming days. Local sheriff's offices there say they have not been asked to assist during the planned operations. And a vote to release the Epstein files will be held by the House in the coming days. House Speaker Mike Johnson is required to put the bill on the floor after a petition related to the matter reached 218 signatures.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update. This Blue Origin thing is really fascinating to me. The new Glenn rocket that launched yesterday. John, you said you watched the launch.
Yeah, I watched the launch.
We're sending two devices to Mars. Like, they're hanging out right now at a distance around the Earth of a million miles, waiting for the Earth and Mars to line up properly so it's closest distance to Mars. And they missed their window previously when they would have had it. It's going to basically use gravity from Earth, I guess, to kind of, I don't know if it's a slingshot thing, you know, everybody who's seen Star Trek 4, you know, or if that's what they're trying to do. But the point is, it's going to go to Mars, arriving there in 2027. They're going to map the upper atmosphere and magnetic fields, trying to figure out how those things work with the solar wind. Because, you know, we've long had this concern about solar wind and its effect on humans and the issue of being outside of the protective layer of the Earth and what, you know, all of the stuff that's kind of an uncertainty around sending, you know, people to Mars. Anyway, so they're going to be, these two devices are going to be circling around Mars, getting kind of a bifocal look at it. And just figuring out how to protect the astronauts that go there eventually. I mean, this is a really amazing project. Like, hey, you know, we're sending stuff to Mars to study it. You know, ho-hum, no big deal. And they've got the next round of things. The Space Launch System, SLS, is going to be going around the moon soon. We're going to be going back to the moon soon. We saw the, remember the Indians put their, you know, the India space program, they put their lunar orbiter, and it actually showed photographs of the old, like the Apollo mission debris.
That's
and things.
Awesome.
I'm sure it's faked. Obviously, we've never been to the moon. I mean, as everybody knows, you've seen Capricorn 1. Okay. It's time to give it up, people. We've been to the moon.
We were there.
The Earth is round. I don't know. What else do you want to know?
Fox News. I'm Therese Crowley. President Trump takes on the affordability challenge with new trade deals to roll back prices of everyday goods, things we don't grow, starting with bananas, cocoa, and coffee, up 20% this year. Vice President J.D. Vance tells Fox's Hannity the goal.
Make sure that more people can afford a good life, they can afford to buy homes, young people can afford to start families, and we've actually got good jobs that put people on a career trajectory to stability.
Air traffic off to a better start today as the system recovers from the government shutdown, 600 cancellations, fewer delays. Some TSA workers in Houston got a surprise, $10,000 bonus checks from Homeland Secretary Kristi Noem with thanks for not calling out. The BBC offers apologies but no cash compensation to President Trump for editing his January 6th remarks to sound like a direct call to violence. America is listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It's 8:31 at News Radio 92.3. We've got sunshine. It's 59 degrees right now. Beautiful Friday morning, and happy Friday to you. About 30 minutes now away from the gates opening at NAS Pensacola. They are reopening to the public today. The Naval Aviation Museum and Lighthouse will be open, and there is a Blue Angels practice. And that is scheduled for 1 p.m. today. The flight line gates opening at 11. And they say this will be the last opportunity of the year to see the Blue Angels fly before they're done for the season. If you're going to go, you do need to have a real ID or a valid passport to get on board base. NAS Pensacola, of course, also has no weapons policy and a clear bag policy, and backpacks and large purses not permitted. Parking on base is free but limited, so once they reach the parking limit, base access could be limited. Again, the West Gate opens at 9 a.m. today to the public, and the Blue Angels are set to fly at 1 p.m. Per the Naval Aviation Museum. The reimagined Palafox project is moving forward, the city council approving that on a 5-2 vote last night. Many city residents spoke out against the project, they saying they believe it would benefit big developers but not working class residents. The project includes brick pavers, ADA and stormwater work, along with a complete facade makeover.
We don't hear much opposition to the safety and the ADA and the stormwater and the repaving. The street is in a pretty blighted condition as it sits now. And so those things have to be addressed. In order to address them, you end up with the demolition. You end up with the significant construction project.
That is Council President Jared Moore. He did support the project. Two votes against it were from Councilman Charles Baer and Councilwoman Allison Patton. Construction on the $10.7 million project is expected to start in January and wrap up by next summer. Well, if you drive a newer car and it's got a push-button start, there's a growing theft threat you might want to know about. It's called key fob cloning. Thieves are using that to steal vehicles. They don't even have to break in or hotwire it. PPD spokesman Mike Wood explained the problem to us yesterday. He says the key fob is constantly transmitting a signal to your car, even when you're not using it.
And they will clone another fob, and they will open your car. The car obviously just thinks it's you, and it's going to open up, it's going to start, and they will be able to drive off with your vehicle.
And the issue has become more common nationwide, even worldwide, as the push-button start cars have become the norm. And Mike Wood recommended storing your keys in a Faraday cage or a metal container to block the signal. And he says, yes, Grandma's old cookie tin collection could actually work for that.
Isn't Grandma awesome? And she can give these away as Christmas gifts this Christmas. Finally get rid of them, unload them, because her grandkids are driving cars with key fobs. So you know what? That's I didn't realize it, but wow.
And of course, Mike Wood spoke with us yesterday about that. Covenant Health and Community Services is providing $500,000 for the Council on Aging of West Florida to address their funding shortage. Now that funding is expected to help them restore their congregate meal program to 5 days a week and expand their Meals on Wheels program. It's 8:35 at News Radio 92.3. John's got our traffic on the fives.
That's right. Brought to you by Anderson Subaru. We've got one accident on the books right now that happened at Navy Boulevard and Chiefs Way. It's off to the side of the road, but I'm starting to see some delays on Navy Boulevard. I-10, I-110, 90, 98, all look good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thank you very much, John. And right now we've got mostly sunny skies. It's 60 degrees in Pensacola. Let's get our forecast from Brooke Richardson.
Plenty of sunshine today with temperatures starting out in the 50s. We'll get into the mid-70s for your afternoon high today. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping back near 54 degrees. For Saturday, nice sunny skies, high near 75. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 59. Keeping the sunshine around for Sunday with a high near 75 degrees. And Sunday night, temperatures dropping near 62. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. It's 60. We've got sunshine right now. Our next news at 9 and breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3. And taking a look at your money now this hour, are at the opening bell on Wall Street, markets are down. The Dow's down over 1%, about 1.2% almost, 557 points at 46,901. Our S&P is down just at 1%, 65.8 points. At 66.71. The NASDAQ is down 1.27% today, down 291 points at 22,587. Looking at the 10-year bond rate, down at 4.096%. Gold prices are down $141 at $4,053. Silver is down 288 at 50.28. And crypto is a bit mixed this morning. Bitcoin right now is down 2266 at 96,051.80. Ethereum is up about $4 at 3177. The rest of the crypto is all mixed as well. Again, Solana down, Dogecoin up by a fraction of a cent. XRP is down as well. Taking a look at our financial headlines today. More than 3,000 striking Boeing employees in the St. Louis area headed back to work.
Members of the International Machinists and Aerospace Workers voted on Thursday to approve Boeing's latest contract offer, ending the strike at 102 days. The new five-year contract gives union members a pay raise and a $6,000 upfront bonus. It also guarantees all members will keep their jobs, even with Boeing hiring replacement workers. I'm Mark Niefield.
The Trump administration is planning to ease tariffs on four Latin American nations. Yesterday, the White House announced they've agreed to frameworks for trade deals with Argentina, Guatemala, Ecuador, and El Salvador. The deals will remove tariffs on certain foods and other products not produced in the U.S. in large enough numbers. This comes just a day after Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent said Americans will see substantial announcements in the next few days regarding availability. An airline trade group calling for air travel protection in case of a future shutdown. Airlines for America issued a statement Wednesday. They said, quote, "We implore Congress to ensure funding bills do not allow aviation to become collateral damage in Washington's policy debates." The statement comes as flight tracking website FlightAware reported thousands of flights were canceled on Thursday after weeks of aviation chaos. 8:38, our next news at 9 and breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Are you looking for the best news in talk radio in Pensacola? Then tune in to News Radio Pensacola. We're your source for the latest news, weather, and traffic, as well as in-depth interviews with local and national leaders. We also have the best talk radio lineup in town, with hosts that are passionate about the issues that matter to you. So whether you're looking to stay informed or just want to hear some great conversation, News Radio Pensacola is the place for you. News Radio Pensacola. Informative, local, dependable.
I will definitely call you back later then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big sharp it up.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Mr. Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
That's a wrap. It's a chance for me to talk with a couple of friends here in studio. I like to get people with different perspectives. Today is a good example of that. Jeremy Evans, who we've had on many, 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 many times. Jeremy, welcome back. Good to
Thanks,
have
sir.
You. Solid conservative. Well, yeah, I mean,
yeah,
I say.
Solid conservative,
you know,
absolutely.
You were the chairman of the Escambia Party.
Yeah,
you know,
I have all the credentials.
Um, And Kim Klein, who ran as a no-party affiliate for the District 2 against Alex Andrade in the most recent election. She is also managing partner at Tranquil Villas Retirement Center and formerly the top government at Gulf Breeze High in debate, right?
Yep, and I was a debate coach.
That's actually when you and I first met. That was the thing I was like, oh, my people. You know, debate and government, I'm there, I'm
in.
I was a championship debater in high school, and it's changed a lot. I don't even think they use the National Forensics League anymore.
Do they? Well, they did 5 years ago.
I was
policy
extemporaneous,
and I was a good policy debater, and I was a champion for an extemporaneous speaker. No,
okay. Oh, both. Yeah. Wow,
Illinois.
Both sides of the house, yeah. Right brain and left brain.
Yep. Yeah, policy's not as big here. We do more of the public
value.
Forum.
Yeah.
For people who do not know, there are different styles of debate. Policy debate is where you come with a proposition to do something, and then you have things like harm inherency, you know, plan insolvency. Then you have values debate, which I never did, but I probably would have loved in retrospect.
Lincoln Douglas. But our biggest one, at least at Gulf Breeze, where they did so well was the like informative debates where they do speech events.
Okay.
But also the public forum debate. So you take a topic and then the kids have to prepare cases for and against whatever, and it's always a controversial
on the spur
issue.
Right?
Yeah. Well, no, they have
this is proper
prepared.
Okay.
For it.
Mm-hmm. The forensic
really
stuff that I always thought was amazing is the guys who did it.
Makes them look at both sides of everything.
Absolutely essential. Being able to argue for the other side, being able to understand the other side, take it seriously, articulate it as well as an advocate would, you know, and something better. I mean, if the advocate looks at you and you're saying their viewpoint that you disagree with and they know you disagree with it, I mean, that's always winning. If I'm talking to somebody I disagree with and I say their view in a way better than they say it, they're like, oh. It's a little but that's respect, right?
Yeah.
That's taking the idea seriously. Anyway, so I have a very, very fond part of my heart for anybody who teaches debate. Let's talk about the THC thing because I think this is phenomenally fascinating. I did not know, I will confess, until this week, I did not really grasp that anybody anywhere can walk into what we used to call them a head shop or a marijuana shop or whatever and buy gummies with massive amounts of THC derived from hemp and go home and get high without a medical card. There's no regulation or prohibition. I don't know why. I thought that you had to have a medical marijuana card to buy this stuff. And I kind of knew that at Winn-Dixie and Publix, you could buy the THC drinks, and it has a lot of THC infused. And it's next to the alcohol, and I knew you had to be 21, but I kind of thought that this was for medical marijuana people. And no, just everybody, because in 2018, we put an ag bill in at the federal level that said hemp is fine. And then, you know, entrepreneurial, inventive Americans came along and found a way to produce highly concentrated THC from hemp. And it's been on sale basically ever since. This is crazy. So now the subsequent development is that in the bill that opened the government, they did away with that and made it so a container that has THC can only have 0.3 milligrams, I think is how it works. So now 95% of the industry is wiped away starting next year. Mm. I think it's fascinating. Jeremy?
I mean, I think so. There's two different whole conversations here. Conversation one is about the value of whether or not the THC thing is okay or not okay. Mm-hmm. And then secondly is the conversation about things that get added on to bills in the government that have significant impact to some section of Americans. And I think that that is always a dangerous thing. And you look back at any time there's been some massive bill that gets passed, you have these riders, the add-ons, all of that kind of stuff, which I think is extraordinarily dangerous. And it's kind of, you get back into, we have to, in order to figure out what's in the bill, we got to vote for the bill first.
Right.
And I think that's what happens, because who's going to be the guy who says, well, I want to reopen the government, but I'm against this THC thing, so I'm voting against the bill. I think that's a whole dangerous thing on the THC thing.
Single subject. I mean, bills should be single subject. And honestly, my view has always been bills should be single subject and no more than 10 pages.
Yeah, well, because it also keeps the voter out of the loop.
Right.
You know, who has time to read bills that long? And you almost have to have a degree in order to be able to understand what they're saying. So they rely heavily on the media. They rely heavily on how they're interpreted by their representatives. And, I understand.
Well, look
that.
At the lingering effects of some of the bills passed last time, like SB 180, maybe it was a different one, but the one that made it so you can't put in zoning changes or land development code changes that are going to adversely affect a builder when you're declared emergency zone. And we're a declared emergency zone, for goodness sake. Right. So now all of a sudden they can't do LDC approval. Like, what in the good Lord?
Yeah.
This
yeah.
stuff's crazy. And like you say, you've got to have a law degree to read some of these. I mean, look, I have a philosophy degree. I should be able to read almost anything and understand it. I read these bills, and sometimes this is Florida legislator bills. I read them three or four times. I'm like, I'm still not sure
they're
what
really
that
hard.
Says.
They're really hard.
And just that's crazy.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that there's the scientists are always going to stay one step ahead of the law. And so they're going to figure out some way to manipulate or whatever the law is to create some new synthetic substance that's the same as what it is. I remember many years ago when Clay Ingram, he had passed several bills dealing with the spice and the things. And the fear was, like, you're always going to be chasing the science. It was the same thing they said about the PEDs in baseball. Like, at some point, you can't – the scientists are
the
always going to be one step
ahead. The chemistry changes too fast for the legislation.
But
the
answer to that is not stop chasing it. You just have to continue to chase that fight if it's something that society thinks is not okay.
I've always wondered if there wasn't a way – and I don't know enough to know, but I've always wondered if there wasn't some way to define effects rather than to define the inputs. You know, if to have impairment be the test rather than the substance be the test. You know, I mean, we do give DUI tests, but then, of course, we rely on the blood alcohol. So, I don't, you know, that would only apply in driving mostly. But still, that was kind of my thought is there a way to ban the effect rather than to ban the cause of it?
Yeah. I also think I want to bring up another problem
Can you hold up for...
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
We're behind and John's giving me the stink eye. John Pickens has traffic on the five. John?
All right. Let's see here. Just one accident on the books. Navy Boulevard and Chiefs Way. No roadblock associated with it, nor delays. I just wanted you to be aware. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the five, and I'm not giving you a stink eye.
Not this time. Okay, so back to Kim. Go ahead. You were going to say.
No, I think there's just there's a lot of inconsistency federally and statewide across the entire country with marijuana laws or anything having to do with marijuana or having to do with hemp. And
because marijuana is still a Schedule One, even in Colorado, and so it's legal, but it's not legal.
Right.
And it's now the THC is going to be legal and not legal.
It's a challenge to the entire federal system, too, you know, because the idea is that if there's no federal law against something, the states are allowed to do whatever they want, basically.
Right.
So when we have a situation like this where the federal government steps in and on the dime changes something, it's not just the industry that's affected, but it's the states that are implementing these laws that are affected, too. So it does... You know, I mean, it's a ripple effect of problems that are caused by not having like a consistent message.
And I think it's a $95 billion
It's a ridiculously high
across the country.
Yeah, across the country. But I don't know when you're talking, when they talk about the industry, are you talking about the industry that includes the dispensary stuff? Or are you talking about just the specific gas station items like the THC infused beverages and those kind of things? And
the THC products in the bill. They say is about a 95
billion.
Wait a minute. Let me see here. I swear it was 95 billion, but I'm going to look real quick. Go ahead. You were going to say something else.
We were talking about impairment levels, and unless the dynamics of this debate have changed, the number one money behind making sure that all this THC stuff is illegal are companies like InBev, who is formerly Anheuser-Busch. It's the alcohol companies that are trying to keep the THC stuff illegal. Because they want to have the entirety of that market.
I think Bayer distributes some of the THC products, but their view on it, as I understand it, is, and I heard this from Collier Merrill too, is, you know, as a bar owner, as a restaurant owner, people might come in and buy one THC drink and they're done.
Okay.
It's hard to make, if your business is built on selling people three or four or five over the course of a night, one doesn't foot the bill. It was 95% of the $28 billion retail hemp market
that
they say would be affected by
this. And then I completely lost my train of thought on what I was going to say. You said that, and my mind started doing math.
I know. No, but you were talking about the single subject rule and having things thrown in at the last minute, and good governance is open and transparent, and at least you can understand what's going on. Right. I mean, I think of local government. I watch all the meetings.
Yeah.
I cover two counties, okay? I also watch Tallahassee. I don't watch a lot of federal unless I really feel the need to, but I watch all the local meetings. I mean, I get paid to do it, and then I try to present it to other people, but I'm amazed that the average citizens watch these meetings because they're so long and they're some of them so boring.
I don't think the average person is watching.
And that's just one government, or a couple of governments.
I think we all get involved when something happens that directly impacts us. If you're impacted, whether it's you're outraged about something or you're economically impacted some way, then you start digging and try to get to the bottom, and it's like pulling a thread.
You
start pulling, and it's like, oh my gosh.
You get sucked into this enormous thing, right?
Yeah,
and it's one of the really, really dangerous, I don't know if dangerous is the right word, sad things about the local press market, the Pensacola News Journal, is not as successful as it was once ago, which makes it harder for them. That's where most people would find information on those meetings, would be from you or Rick Outson or the news journal. And then you're getting it through a lens of somebody else's focus. And if there's less of those views to kind of, okay, I read his version, I read this version, the truth is probably somewhere in the middle of those things. You're relying on people who may have an opinion that they're injecting into their...
No, the truth is what I say.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, like, look at what happened this week at the county commission meeting with somebody trying to bring... Ashley was trying to bring
up... Oh, my God. This is so ugly. Yeah. Just a quick recap if you weren't listening yesterday. So Ashley Hoffberger, commissioner for District 4, wanted to bring an item to talk about putting the budget back at the rollback rate for next year. And she had gotten told when she wanted to talk about this earlier, bring it for next year. So she's trying to do that. She's actually talking about hiring somebody to come in and do an analysis and see how possible it is. Well, she told Wes Moreno 2 weeks before the meeting, put this on the agenda. And then he didn't. Now, he says, you know, we talked with you on the day before and we explained why this is going to take a little bit more time. And she's like, well, I want it on the agenda. Put it on the agenda. Stephen Barry, in the meeting, as much as said, he squelched it. I mean, he didn't say that, but he kind of implied it, like, you know, maybe you don't have enough support from your other commissioners. Well, how would you know until you've had a meeting to discuss it? Mm-hmm. Literally, the way to find out and persuade is to have the conversation. So it looks like he's behind the scenes, you know, running the county, what we do and don't talk about. Mike Kohler is the chairman and didn't even know about any of this. That's awful. Like, that's every city council member should be able to bring an item. Every county commissioner should be able to bring an item. Everybody has co-equal power, right? They should all be able to bring the items.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I agree. And I think there's a larger conversation about the value of how stringently we apply the Sunshine Laws to the county commission. I think it creates inefficient government. And theoretically, you give a whole lot of power to your county administrator and your county attorney because they're the ones who are able to talk to the commissioners individually. And then, you know, are they running, you know, again, how they view a conversation when they talk to a different county commissioner may color how some of that conversation has. So you're giving a lot of power to unelected people.
Or if you have a mayor.
Or if you have a mayor.
I mean, D.C. can talk to all of the city council members individually.
Yeah.
Right? So he has a lot of power under that system because they cannot talk to each other ahead of the meeting. Right.
But there are times where government has to make unpopular decisions. It's not great.
No, it doesn't, Jeremy. They're only going to do things we all love. What are you talking about?
But there are times where they have to make unpopular decisions. But if they're going to make those decisions, some of those conversations can't happen in front of people or those decisions will never be made.
Or even if there was a way, because we, you know, everyone has a public forum opportunity to come and talk. And so when we keep everything wide open, I think even Ashley said in that thing, if I can't bring it up on an agenda item, my people don't know it's going to be talked about. I can't gain support from the board or even let my constituents know I'm doing my job if you don't let me have this item on the agenda. But sometimes when folks come out to talk, because I've been to a lot of those meetings too, and I think, well, if you hear a lot of people on the same topic speak, you think maybe if you just narrowed it down to a couple people who have the really best points on this and let's you know, group together, sometimes it's a lot more effective because after like the 15th person that is, you know, screaming at the commissioners, you could see everyone's eyes have glazed over and they're not listening anymore. So I think, you know, it's two sides to that issue.
And that's, I think that's the theory behind having like the committee of the whole meeting, right? Is we're going to have a topic and we're going to truly try to get a bunch of different perspectives. And so we can really hash it out before we take any votes. And even without necessarily the public weighing in, you know, because we just want to have, like you said, more of a presentational approach. And I mean, I'm so with you as somebody who watches all these meetings. I'm like, you know, that's been said like 8 times.
Yeah.
I think of the Sanger stuff, you know, like, oh, my God.
But you get your name on that list,
said,
and you've been waiting for 20 minutes. And
then they start begging for more time. Like, no, less. Say it quicker. Make 2 points and be done, you know?
And in every county commission in the state of Florida is going to have really tough conversations over the next 18 to 24 months. Because the reality
about
is there is some form of property tax reform that's going to be passed. It's going to happen. It is so political now that the rock so far down the hill, you're not going to stop. But the question is, what form is it going to take?
Hey, now, do you mean it's going to get through the legislature, or do you mean it's going to get ratified 60%?
Has a property tax amendment ever
not
gotten passed?
I just want to make sure we're saying both things.
But I got a question for you, because you might have some insight in this. So how is this whole, like, how is it overseen as far as I know that they are talking about targeting homesteaded properties, right? But how's it going to affect commercial properties? Because that's what I've been thinking. Is it going to pass that expense on to, let's say, rental communities so that So that renters carry the
There are about 47 different versions of what property tax reform is going to look like.
There's actually, I think, 7 filed bills with different proposals, right?
And the version the legislature wants is not nearly as stringent as what the governor wants. And so I think that it's impossible to know what's going to come out. I think the reality is something will get on the ballot, and then once it's on the ballot, it's going to pass because everybody wants their taxes to be lowered. Mm-hmm. They don't care about the impact it's going to have on their community. They just want lower taxes.
It's a shell game.
I'm actually amazed when we pass like the local option sales tax increase. I'm always amazed by that because I think that's people actually voting smartly. You know, to
well, it's because there's a problem somewhere that they right, recognize. They oh my gosh, we got to deal with
this. The question is, will do all the sheriffs rally against this? Because they're saying it's not going to affect education is what most
it's
of
not,
them say.
Yeah, it's not going to come out of that slice,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. So then you're getting bigger pieces taken out of everything else, and I think the biggest one besides the schools is typically the sheriff.
Right.
And so
and roads, right, but yeah.
Sheriffs have a whole lot of – they're usually the most popular elected person in the county. So do those people line up against this? And there's all kinds of political things that are going to happen, but I think it's – unlikely to not pass unless you get a whole lot of people locally who say
if the measure is clear and it says you'll pay less property tax, it'll pass.
Yeah.
John Pickens has got traffic on the fives. John?
That's right. No accidents to report to you right now. Everything is looking good in our area. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. So, you know, I had so many things on the list of what we would talk about, and as is a good conversation, we haven't got to almost any of it, which is perfect.
As always.
I love that. No, I know that's exactly right. I do want to just briefly, because it's come up, the 50-year mortgage.
It's terrible.
Like, okay, so if the problem is the price of a thing is too high because demand is high and supply is low, and you're now going to increase demand, how will that make the prices go down? You're going to make it easier for people to get a mortgage, theoretically, but that means that there will be more people bidding on the houses or bidding... having more money, and this is going to counteract any advantage that it's got. Plus, now people are paying twice as much in the long-term interest. You're going to have your grandkids co-sign for your... I mean, like, what world does this make sense?
Yeah, and you're monkeying around. You're right. You're monkeying around with the economy.
Mm-hmm.
But when you... I just read an article about this yesterday that said that if you bought a $400,000 house and you got it with a... you know,
a 30-year versus a 50.
30 versus yeah. 50, did you see that? And you would be paying $1.2 million for this house. And your monthly mortgage payment would only be about $200 less.
That's right.
So it's like I
and you
so
reach your
times-
equity benchmarks way slower.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. My wife and I actually are talking about buying a new house. And we started to have this conversation about how much money you lose in the interest payments.
Mm-hmm.
Like they say you're throwing away money when you rent your house. But if you're paying as much as you're renting as you are in interest, how much money are you actually throwing away by renting a house
right.
as opposed to the interest? And that's on a 30-year mortgage.
Yeah, I think 30 years are crazy.
Yeah.
Because a 30-year mortgage, you pay, what, twice the value of your home over the course of that time?
Yeah,
because it's all interest in the beginning.
But that's also, a lot of times people refinance. It's a way for them to get their foot in the door,
right.
and then they make a little bit more money in 5 or 10 years, and they refinance.
If you believe property values will go up, and if you believe interest rates will be significantly lower, this gets, you know, you plant your flag in, and then later you can get your money back out, maybe.
But, you know, property insurance plays into this as well, too.
Right.
You're talking about buying versus renting and what that does to the real estate
but
market.
But if you're talking about, like, the problem right now is if you could, let's say you had $1 million house and you wanted to sell your house for $1 million and stay in this community. Well, then you've got to buy a house.
Right.
So how much equity, like, you're just transferring your equity from one thing to another thing.
Right.
You haven't gained equity in anything because you have to buy in the same market that you're selling in.
Right.
And so it becomes...
And your
challenge.
Tax rates go up because your baseline's moved. So you can have the house worth exactly the same, but you're going to be paying more in taxes. So people think about that, especially with high-earner homes. Like, maybe I won't sell my house right now, you know?
Yep. I love this conversation. It's so much fun. Oh, my goodness. Argos are playing tomorrow. Finish off a perfect season.
Absolutely.
Maybe. Hopefully. Oh, I see. Hey, man. Will Kennedy's over there. How you doing, brother? Will Kenny's a play-by-play guy for the Argos, and I didn't intentionally do that, but he walked out of the Cat Country studio at exactly the same time. Well, Kim Klein, thank you for the time. Thanks for what you do. Jeremy, thanks for what you do and what your wife does for education. I appreciate you guys. Good show.
You're listening to